in a very concrete way, Zizek gives us a clue in his account of the Bolshevik Revolution and the rise of Stalinism as to why a Lacanian problematic is insufficient, to say the least, as a tool for social and political analysis. Zizek's Lacanian critique of Bolshevism is expressed best in his book on Lenin, Revolution at the Gates, and his preface to Trotsky's Terrorism and Communism. I hope to show how Lacan and Zizek serve as negative examples for our panel today of how not to fill in what Eric Fromm and E.P. Thompson called the empty place within Marxism, i.e. the need to theoretically develop the subjective dialectic of human psychology and Marxism that's already implicit in Marx. But first, we must give a brief account of Lacan's return to Freud and what this entails. It's a return that winds up exploding Freud's original edifice of supplementing Freud's focus on Eros with a new interpretation of the death wish as death drive, and a neo-Hegelian Kojevian, after Alexander Kojev, understanding of the struggle for recognition. But even beyond this, there is an attempt to treat the unconscious and repression along the lines of language, or as operating along a symbolic order that does not take into account any conflict between nature and culture that other Freudians, particularly the early work of Wilhelm Reich and Herbert Marcuse, did. This conflict was essential for what the early Reich and Marcuse called the biological basis of socialism, inherent in human nature, and how the unconscious could serve as a reservoir of repressed needs that remained unsatisfied or even perverted by capitalism's performance principle. But the unconscious for Lacan is not a locus of primitive or rudimentary mental activity or a demand for somatic and sensuous fulfillment. The very idea of the unconscious in Lacan, and even the traditional subject of Western philosophy, are products of a cultural and symbolic order. Even the idea of resistance, the search for what Lacan calls the real beyond the symbolic order, through the breakdown of our cultural fantasies, is ultimately an illusory pursuit. There are not two distinct languages clashing against one another, one conscious and the other unconscious, since the unconscious for Lacan is part of the same essential discourses that structure the whole of social reality. In other words, what Lacan calls the real is extanimate to the symbolic, or only exists insofar as there is a symbolic order of which the real is parasitic on. The conclusion from this is that Lacan eliminates any talk of actuality, of concrete material relations, or of a theory of instincts or needs in the more orthodox Freudian sense, since all of these things are effects of language or discourse. Like Heidegger before him, Lacan sees language as the house of being and is constitutive of the world, and not as a means of apprehending its real structures beyond language. By linguistifying the unconscious, Lacan essentially does away with the unconscious as a real material site of resistance. Now, in Slavoj Žižek, we see a development of certain Lacanian categories to analyze the history of social struggle in terms of an unstable negative dialectic between the symbolic, the imaginary, and the real, of how a struggle for the real itself, even if only exanimate to the symbolic, is valorized as authentic. In terms of Zizek's anti-capitalism, the symbolic functions as the prevailing democratic liberal order, the imaginary, the current fantasies and ideologies that sustain that order, and the real. The real is not synonymous with the established reality of liberal capitalism, though it exists as an inherently destabilizing gap that the system must disavow explicitly if it is to function. And for this, Zizek thinks the real is class struggle. Or as Zizek sometimes calls it, the real is the part that is no part of the system. It is this dynamic between the real and the symbolic that fuels Zizek's social ontology and recapitulates all the themes of existentialism, where the affirmation of the real becomes an affirmation of radical contingency. This affirmation of radical contingency is how Zizek reads Bolshevism, how it represents a breath of fresh air as compared to the cynicism of the postmodern left, and this left's incredulity towards any totalizing politics. Specifically, Lenin and Trotsky, in Zizek's view, were able to transverse the fantasy, i.e. to cut through the ideological fog of capitalism, Bolshevism for Zizek represents an ethics of the real, defined by an anti-liberal embrace of ruthlessness and uncompromising struggle. This emphasis on ruthlessness is the main point of Zizek's On Belief. There he argues for the need to read Lenin as a secularized Marxist version of St. Paul. The actual value of Lenin's, and as we shall see, Trotsky's political philosophy lies in Zizek in the authenticity of unconditional ideological commitment to the cause of the proletariat, a cause that cannot be resolved on the level of the symbolic. The real substance of Bolshevik commitment is turned in Zizek into a pure faith in the truth of the real. For Zizek, the essence of Bolshevism is more akin to the nature of a Kierkegaardian leap of faith, where you teleologically suspend the ethical, rather than revolutionary movement arising out of real historical forces and the political and intellectual ferment generated by the combined and unequal developments of world capitalism. Switching to Trotsky, Zizek argues that Trotsky's writings during the Russian Civil War for world revolution rely on an illusory optimism. He cast Trotsky and Lenin's faith and the prospects for European revolution as dogmatic and abstract. But instead of looking and analyzing these prospects concretely, as Trotsky and other Bolsheviks tried to do by looking at the actual balance of power between classes in the West and critiquing real political mistakes made in the first wave of revolutionary struggle, Zizek washes over these crucial historical junctures in terms of a psychoanalytic drama of messianic fever and quasi-religious commitment. This messianic mapping does not correspond to the real historical coordinates of revolutionary possibility argued for in Trotsky's writings on Germany in Lessons of October and other places. While Zizek admires, in a romantic vein, the earnestness and ruthlessness of the Bolshevik project, he does not see Trotskyism as the real alternative to Stalinism, and does not analyze the rise of Stalinism in light of social immaterial circumstances. Instead, he sees its emergence according to his own ideological and ontological presuppositions about the symbolic and the real. In Zizek, Lenin and Trotsky's roles are subjected to what could be called a Lacanian reductionism. While the ethics of Bolshevism remained a passion for the real, for the truth of emancipated working class, this passion for the real, for Zizek, necessarily has to dissipate into a new symbolic order. The revolutionary act that seeks the real can only temporarily suspend the symbolic, since the real is parasitic on the symbolic, and the deep structure in this Lacanian view can't be changed. For Zizek, there cannot be any permanent resolution of the real, since the real itself is sustained by its being part of the symbolic register. An act can destroy the bourgeoisie, but it can't destroy these symbolic structures. Since Zizek's philosophy presupposes a permanent tension or negativity between these registers, the features of illusion, exclusion, ideological reification, and ultimately repression have to be part of any political order, since they are inscribed within the very fabric of existence itself. This is the reason for Zizek's treatment of Bolshevism as a dark precursor, a Deleuzian term, to Stalin. Stalin's terror is merely a repetition of the original Red Terror, confirming the metaphysical inability to overcome negativity. All revolutions necessarily have to betray themselves, because alienation and antagonism are inevitable. Stalinism, in Zizek's Hegelese, is therefore the truth of Bolshevism. The fact that Stalinism is terroristic is not Zizek's problem. On the contrary, compared with liberalism, Zizek tends to admire this aspect of Stalinism. And it demonstrates an authentic continuity for Zizek between Lenin and Stalin. The irony here is Zizek presents himself as demolishing liberal nostrums, but he reformulates a major nostrum shared by liberals about the continuity between Bolshevism and Stalinism, with the Bolshevik opposition under Trotsky facing a metaphysical inability to overcome Stalinism. Stalinism must reemerge in Zizek's schema as a matter of necessity. Again, the most Zizek can say on the minimal difference between Leninism and Stalinism was that Leninism was more candid and honest in its violence and repression, while Stalinism hid behind an ideological lie apparatus as it sanitized and humanized its actions. For instance, in the Moscow show trials and juridically interpolating people as subjects. The content of the struggle between Trotsky and Stalin, with the former representing the interests of proletarian democracy, and the latter an emerging Soviet aristocracy, is downplayed to focus on the form of the struggle. We are left with an extremely ahistorical picture, with Zizek admiring the honest tough guys, Lenin and Trotsky, over the dishonest tough guys, Stalin and company. What we see in this minimal difference is a relativization, not to mention a trivialization, of the struggle Trotskyism, a struggle that proposed its own alternative to the bureaucracy and concrete political programs. This alternative was far removed from any ethics of the real or subjective faith, as is clear from the joint platform of the opposition and other documents of the opposition in the 20s. Besides Bolshevik policy, though, Zizek's fascination with the utopian fevers of the revolution, as expressed in literature at that time, the Russian Civil War, further distorts our picture of the Russian Revolution. Zizek gathers in his writings on Lenin and his preface to Trotsky's Terrorism and Communism an uncritical assemblage of utopian images, what Bloch might call a case of uneducated hope. And as we glide past all the references that are given little scrutiny, we come across an odd discussion in Zizek's essay on Trotsky about Alexander Bloch's The Twelve. Bloch was a symbolist poet who, among with other members of the Russian avant-garde, came over to the revolution by fusing his earlier mystical and messianic conceptions with an ambiguous support for the Bolsheviks. But the reason why it is odd for Zizek to mention Bloch in an introduction to Trotsky is that Zizek cites the problem without even mentioning Trotsky's own analysis of the 12 itself, given in Literature and Revolution. This results in Zizek's overemphasis of these artistic phenomena to distort Trotsky's position in Terrorism and Communism as part of this alleged messianic fever gripping all the Bolsheviks. Trotsky, too, analyzes the hope and despair that Zizek attempts to illustrate in Bloch's The Twelve. But while admitting that The Twelve is Bloch's best work, with the poem expressing the spiritual conflict in Bloch between the revolutionary and the mystic, Trotsky admits it's still not a poem of the revolution, a poem of optimized revolutionary consciousness. Zizek uncritically slaps Trotsky and Bloch together as manifesting a similar apocalyptic utopianism without addressing the differences Trotsky saw in Bloch's last attempt, which Trotsky called the swan song of the individualistic art that went over to the revolution. But nevertheless, this swan song remained non-revolutionary for Trotsky. As Trotsky says, The Twelve is not a poem of the revolution, because after all, the meaning of the revolution as an element does not consist in realizing individualism that had been driven into a blind alley. The inner meaning of the revolution remains somewhere outside the poem. Zizek ends his introduction to Trotsky with an exegesis of Trotsky's dream from his diary in exile. For Zizek, Lenin, who makes an appearance in one of Trotsky's dreams, comes back to Trotsky as a ghost, someone analogous to Joe Hill, as a floating signifier of emancipation. Yes, it's a great passage for this. Lenin in Zizek's hands becomes a specter, not too far from the spectrality of Derrida's Marx, the specters of Marx. And repeating Lenin, what Zizek calls repeating Lenin, we extract from Lenin his revolutionary and utopian energy for emancipation, just as Derrida's specters of Marx, we extract from Marx the spirit of Marx. But it is a certain spirit Derrida and Zizek are both committed to that negates the historical character of Marxism and the lessons of Bolshevism. Zizek, like Derrida, cannot really define what repeating the truth of Marxism or Leninism is beyond the Heideggerian jargon of being authentic to the idea of communism. To conclude, Zizek's Bolshevism is impossible if we read it without understanding his own psychoanalytic critique, but it distorts the significance of Lenin and Trotsky, arguably running the risk of rearticulating them as left Stalinists. Since his ontology understands the world as constituted by a fundamental negativity of necessary exclusions, reifications, the emergence of Stalinism functions for Zizek in terms of a psychoanalytic drama and not a result of the historical forces, for instance, that Trotsky analyzed throughout his exile. To the failure to address the Russian Revolution adequately stems from Zizek's Lacanian reductionism. Such a reductionism of historical phenomena to Zizek's categories not only distorts the historical significance of Marxism, but also takes from us the means to construct an emancipatory society. In Lacan and in Zizek, we remain trapped in a quasi-transcendental registers and can only replace one fiction with another. Utopia is truly impossible, since the idea of its actualization is made impossible. Zizek tries to theorize a way out through the death drive that Bolshevism incarnates for him, but such active nihilism inevitably becomes undone as the symbolic violently reasserts itself. What one observes in Zizek's existential analytic is an ahistorical reconstruction of Bolshevism that occludes our understanding of the Russian Revolution and fails to propose through Lacanian psychoanalysis a viable theory of human psychology and human liberation. The example of Lacan, as seen through the interpretation of Zizek, shows that not all attempts to fill the empty space of Marxism with the tools of psychoanalysis are equally valid. The Lacan-Zizek enterprise must be considered as one of the false paths taken to fill this gap in Marxist theory. Anyone looking to Zizek as a possible guide to revolutionary politics, or even as someone offering important insights towards the socialist project, will be sorely disappointed. Thank you.
So you don't need to move. Okay.
Okay.
I will introduce you.
Yeah. I will.